I've asked my friends Mike and Lori. They've become really good friends with my wife and myself, but that's not why I invited them. I really think I know they've done the traditions, formally sat down and worked the traditions on their marriage. And observing them, they really communicate. They fight fair. They really do. I've been at their house where one gets mad and, you know, but they fight fair, they're honest about it, and then they settle it. And they, I think they reach, they work together and they communicate very, very well. And also, a goal in mine is in AA, they have their own life, they have a joint life, and each of them have their own life, and they let them each do it. So I'm not the speaker. I could go on forever about these guys, but I'm going to. Who wants to go first? So this is Lori.
My name's Lori. I'm an alcoholic. I thought we were going to be over in the little room over there, not this, but this is okay. I want to thank my friends that are here that drove over from San Diego and a couple people that were hanging out for the weekend. And, you know, I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, yesterday it was funny because we were not the poster child couple yesterday because I fell. I fell and I ended up in the ER. And, we did good, though. Most of the day, you know, and what it is fear of the unknown. And using the tools that I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me to change and grow and become the woman. That's perfect. I thought it was too loud. I'm sorry. It's taught me to become the woman I am. I get to change and grow and make mistakes and make amends and know when I'm right, though, also. I'm right. you know, I met Michael, and I had 5 years sober, and he had 7 years sober, and we became a couple, and he was in the military, and he asked me to marry him in 2001, and I said, and we were 35 at the time, and I said, if we're still together when we're 40, we can get married. And so Michael and I have been together, it'll be 25 years in May. And when I think about the struggles and life and death and everything that we've had to walk through, you know, I am so grateful that we have this program, because if I didn't have you guys, if I didn't have my sponsor to tell on Michael, you know, to talk to her about, you know, okay, this happened, you know, what is my part? You know, I look at my part. I look at his part too, because that's my job. But, you know, you know, we do try to work through traditions, and, you know, our common welfare comes first. And so, you know, as Rick said, I have my meetings. Michael has his meetings. He comes over to Yuma. I stay in San Diego. You know, we have our lives in AA, but then we have our home life and our AA life together. So it's, I really like it a lot because, you know, I was never able to, I didn't have relationships like that. We had to be next to each other. It wasn't like, okay, bye, see you later, and be okay with that, you know, and you guys taught me it's okay to do those things. So, you know, so our common welfare, if something's happening with him, or he wants to do something, or I want to do something, we run it by each other. Or if somebody's coming into the home or into our lives that one of us isn't okay with, you know, it's like we look at, it's our common welfare comes first. And there is one, it's funny because I'm thinking of the traditions. I have to go through this fast, but, you know, there is one who has all power. That one is Michael. He told me that before. The ultimate authority. So, you know, the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous is the best. I love it. I think I'm funny. Sometimes people don't think I'm funny, but I think I'm funny, and I have fun in sobriety. And, you know, if you're new, welcome to AA, or if you're not new. And, you know, being happy, joyous, and free, and being able to be me 100%, is what I learned here. You know, doing meditation and prayer in the morning. I watch Michael. He gets up in the mornings and he has a routine that he does every single morning. I'm not as spiritual, I guess, but I don't mean that in a bad way. But you know, he has a ritual that he does. You know, spiritual, and you know, so when I practice the traditions in our relationship, we're going to have a better relationship. And what I've learned is that communication is the key for me. We were just talking about this earlier. Michael will say something to me. I will turn it around in my head and hear something differently. And so communication is, you know, hey, I heard you say this, and he'll say, I didn't say that. What are you talking about? You know, because my head will switch stuff up. It depends on what space I'm in or whatever. But the communication that we have, and, you know, he has seen me at my worst. I have seen him at his worst. Last night was not a happy place, you know. He wanted me to eat, you know, and here's the thing. He was concerned about me. He wanted me to eat, and I wasn't hungry. And it was a battle, you know. And luckily, Marichal and Connie had gone to the store, you know. But the gift is that I don't leave anymore. You guys taught me to stay. You taught me to stay. You taught me to communicate. You taught me that I am not always right. That I need to listen to his side as well as, you know, we need to listen to each other. And, you know, and sometimes I'm not very good at that, and sometimes I am. And so the support that I have in Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, I talk to my sponsor, and I can call my sponsor and just say, oh, that Michael, because she knows Michael. She knew Michael before I met him. He went to a morning meeting with her at 7 a.m. in the morning, Easy Does It Writers. That's where Rick used to go to that, also in San Diego. And so, you know, using the traditions and guidelines that you guys have taught, you know, the principles, all that stuff comes into my relationship with my husband, as well as my coworkers. You know, I can use the traditions everywhere that I go. And so, I keep looking at the clock. Do I really? Oh my God. Okay. So when I was born, no, I'm joking. You know, so Michael and I met, and he was in the military, and I didn't want to get married because I just didn't, that wasn't my thing. And he said, you know, because he was, it was always the honeymoon stage. He would go away for a couple months, come home, you know, so we didn't get to really know each other. And then when he retired in 2003, he was home all the time. And then we found out that we're compatible. And, you know, as you know, it's funny because I call it the Mike and Lori show. If we're having a party or there's been people over at the house, like Rick said, you know, we don't always agree on stuff. Or he is, you know, I want stuff a certain way, and he wants stuff a certain way. And it's so funny when people say we don't judge and we don't control, because we all have our, I'll speak for myself. I have my way that I like doing things, and he has his way that he likes doing things. Don't nod your head when I see him. He's not. He's like, yeah, she's controlling. You know, I own that. I own that. I'm okay with that. You know, it's I'm 58 years old, and I like things done a certain way. And, you know, it's funny because he'll do something, and I'll do something. And then, you know, communication, though. It's, you know, just stupid stuff like in the kitchen. Like, I didn't like what he was doing with a glass, you know, leaving a glass, whatever it is. But, you know, communicating about that instead of throwing the glass or whatever, you know, putting it away, or saying, hey, can you not put the ninja blade in the sink so I don't cut my finger? And he said, did you cut your finger? And I'm like, no, I didn't cut my finger, but I don't want to cut my finger. You know, just stuff like that it sounds silly, but, you know, I can get resentful. If I don't tell him that or tell somebody that, that can become a resentment. And then I start looking at him and I don't like him. And then he can't talk right, he can't walk right, and he certainly didn't dress right, you know? And so I can, I'm laughing when I said that because I dressed him today. here's what I have learned, is that when I can let go, and I learned from you guys, I can let go and let Michael be who he is. It's, you know, it's my pride and ego when I want him to look good because I want to look good. You know, you can't dress like that. Oh, we were joking about him wearing a shirt that had a stain on it. And I said, oh, if I would do the laundry right, you know. And we laugh about that because but you can't wear that shirt. You can't, you know. And today he can wear what he wants and I'll just stay over here. It doesn't matter. You know, and now he says, if we're going certain places, he says, what do you want me to wear? You know, and so But if I'm not going, you know, it doesn't, it's, it was a letting go thing. It was a letting go process that you guys taught me. You know, I am powerless. I am powerless over what Michael does. And I'm powerless over what you guys do. And, you know, the topic of the roundup is acceptance. And my friend handed me that token that's going around for that, for the roundup. And, you know, when something's happening in my life, you know, I do need to accept it. And just because I accept it doesn't mean that it's okay. You know, I still have to do my part. I have to do my work. I have to look at me. Because if I'm looking at you, you know, I'm pointing the finger. And that's, you know, there's so many old sayings that I don't hear anymore. I'm, you know, you're pointing the finger at me, you got three pointing back at you. You know, and so when I'm saying he's doing, or, you know, the blame game, you know. And so, you know, yesterday, like I said, we were at the ER. And that went well, and we did really good until we were both really tired. We didn't take a nap, you know, because we always take a nap now. And, you know, but we're here this morning. And when Rick was saying what he was saying about our relationship, if you guys would have told me that I would be with someone and still like them after 25 years and still want to be with them, I would have told you you were crazy because I didn't know how to do that before. I didn't know how to stick. And so, I'm not sure how many of the traditions I touched on because I thought I was going to be done really fast. So, but you know, when I, there is a workbook and it's not AA or Al-Anon or it's a workbook. It's called The Traditions in Relationships. And it has questions on how do I treat my husband or your partner? How do you treat that person? And looking at, do I want the best for him or do I think about me? Just little stuff, like big stuff like that. Because when I am able to look at that, I have a completely different perspective on our relationship, on how I look at him, on what he's doing right. You know, I'll end with this. my friend told me to write 10 things down that I loved about Michael. And so every time, and this was a while ago, we were having some things happen in our life. And you know, because it's not always happy, joyous, and free for sure. But she had me write down 10 things I loved about Michael. And I did that. And every time he would, you know, I would get upset or whatever, I would look at that list and I would read that list. Because if I'm looking for what I don't like in him, I can pick a lot of, you know, just like we can all do. We could just separate ourselves from each other. And so it's really, I have a friend in my life who was having a really hard time with somebody that's in her life. And I told her to do the same thing. And so she's doing that now. And so when she wants to, so her perspective has completely changed towards this other person. So, you know, whatever I hear in meetings, whenever you guys share with me little tidbits on how do you, you know, how do you walk through life? How do you communicate? How, whatever it is, you know, I listen because I need you guys, and I can't do this by myself. And I'm so grateful I'm here, and I hope I made sense. Thanks.
Yeah. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Okay, so she just, I stepped up here, and she said, don't. And so, so you like how I'm dressed? I'm good with the cutoff sleeve shirt and cutoff shirt and shorts and my work boots. That's how I'm most comfortable. And you know, I don't. I mean, I dress like this, but you know, one of the funniest things is I have a shirt that she does not like that has a collar on it. It's a starfish shirt, and she'll say, "What are you wearing tonight?" I said, "Well, if you're leaving it up to me, I'm wearing the starfish shirt." You know. And she goes, "Oh no, you're not." She goes, "I'm going to take that shirt and burn it." I said, "Well, it's in the closet." And then I'll also tell her, it's like, "Hey, you know, it's like my closet's in there. Go pick out what you want me to wear because, you know, if you're leaving it up to me, I'm going to wear what I want to wear, you know." And a couple of years ago, actually, when she turned 25 years sober, we were going to a meeting, and I had just taken 27 years, and I was giving her a token. I was presenting her with a token, and she goes, "Is that what you're wearing?" And I'm you know, I'm such a dumbass, right? It's like, I made this statement. I was like, what do you think this is, a grand event or something, right? And it's just like, it was like one of the worst things I could have said, right? My biggest problem is this, right? It's like, I have a very, my best friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, my best male friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I talk to him about everything, and I speak the way I want to speak. I share the way I want to share. You know, I swear and I cuss like a sailor because I was in the Navy for 20 years, right? And we both get each other, right? And I think I can bring that into my house, right? And I can talk to my wife like that, right? And the reality is, she doesn't appreciate that. She doesn't appreciate it when I curse and swear like a sailor and I throw things and I get upset and I get angry, right? It makes her afraid. And I have to remember that, right? I love this woman. You know, she's my best friend. Right? We've been through hell together. She's supported me when my parents died. She's walked with me through all kinds of stuff. You know, the last couple of years I've had some medical issues, and she's been there 100% for me. Right. And so yesterday, when she had her incident and she hurt her leg, right? You know, the first thought that runs through my mind is like, how is this going to affect me? And it's like, you selfish son of a bitch. Right? It's like, this woman has been through hell with you, right? And all you can think about is your selfish little self. And I have to keep constant vigilance of how I project the way I am with my wife, right? Our common welfare does come first. She's the number one priority besides my recovery. And I have to remember that, you know? For our group purpose, there is one ultimate authority, and it is not me, right? But it is God in our group conscience, and sometimes we don't agree, right? We have differences of opinion. And sometimes I will want to force my will upon her, and sometimes she will want to force her will upon me. And when that's happening, we have to step back and take a break, and then come to terms, and then make a decision. And squash our egos and think about what's best for the relationship instead of what I want. And, you know, the third tradition is very important in our relationship, you know. We both choose to be here. Right? It is a conscious choice that we make every day. Right? And that is important, right? You know, the only requirement for membership is a desire to be here. Right? We both have a desire to be in this relationship and stay in this relationship. Right? We try not to let our relationship be influenced by outside issues, political, religious, social, our friends. Right? We have a lot of friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we want to choose sides, right? And it's like we want to support our friends, but not at the cost of our relationship. And I have to remember that. There's a sober living house that just moved in right next door to us, and me, I'm like, come on over, right? and Lori's like, no, this is our sanctuary. We don't know these people, right? And I think about, you know, well, you know, Bill Wilson did it, right? It's like, why can't I, right? And it's just like, well, that was a different era, different times, you know? And I forget about that. I forget about, you know, mental illness, and I forget about what drugs and alcohol do to people. Right, because I'm recovered now, and I have had a change in the way I behave, in the way I act, because I don't drink and use drugs anymore. But that doesn't mean the rest of society has, and she has to remind me of that. Because if it was up to me, it was like, everybody be welcome, just come on over, no problem, right? And I have to remember that, you know, our house is our sanctuary, and our common welfare comes first. Right? It always comes back to our common welfare comes first, always. Right? There has to be unity. Without unity, there is no relationship. Without unity, there is no us. You know, so it's vital and important that we both have our own program in recovery, that we both go to meetings separately, but that we come together for unity. You know, we try not to get into conversations about things that are going to separate us. And I have to be consciously aware of that. You know, I really can't think of anything else that I want to say other than I love my wife. I'm grateful that we're together. You know, I will share one more thing. You know, during COVID, prior to COVID, I figured out that I needed meetings. I needed to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I needed to be involved in recovery with other people. And when COVID happened and everybody, you know, stopped going to meetings and they all went online, I knew that that wasn't going to work for me. And I was like, I need meetings. We need to have meetings. And so we opened up our backyard to, you know, to members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come in Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and we'd have a meeting on the back porch. And I knew that I would need that. I knew that for my personal growth and recovery that that had to take place. And I knew that for us to survive that that would have to take place. And I wouldn't say that Lori was against it, but there was concerns. You know, she was out there like making sure all chairs were 6 feet apart. And I mean, it was, you know, and I was just like, let go. I mean, it's going to happen. We're going to be around each other, you know. And but we ended up having meetings in our backyard. And we were around each other 24 hours a day because I wasn't working and she wasn't working, right? And we found out that we really are compatible, you know, because most of us, you go to work every day and you're gone for 8 hours and then you come back together, unless you're retired, right? It's like where there's a lot of people in this room that are retired. And it's like, and then you're around each other 24/7. And it's just like, and that can get real ugly real fast, right? And what we found out was that we are compatible. We don't have to live in separate parts of the house and actually cut the house in half and put walls into it, you know? It's like we're compatible, and we work at our relationship, and we work at being a unit, you know, a unity. And it was important that that we went through COVID to find that out, right? I'm glad that we found that out now instead of, you know, when we're both ready to retire, and then we're at each other's throats because we don't like each other, right? Because now we're around each other 24/7. And I love my wife. I'm grateful she's a part of my life. And, you know, we supported each other through that. And we found out that we really are compatible, right? And but there were principles that we had to put in place. You know, our common welfare comes first. It always comes back to our common welfare comes first in the relationship. We both met when we were early in recovery, but we didn't meet when we were new in recovery, right? And I think that's vital and important. Right? When boy meets girl on AA campus, you know, all kinds of things can happen. That's not what happened in our relationship. It wasn't boy meets girl on AA campus, although it was. But we had both had sponsors, gone through the steps, and had a spiritual awakening. And we're living different lives than what we were when we were drinking and using. And because of that, you know, we were able to form and bond this relationship that was based on spiritual growth and development and helping each other out instead of what about me, what about me, what about me. And when I was early in recovery, it was all about what about me, right? I need to get this, I need to get that, I need this, I need that, right? And that's not the way our relationship formed. Our relationship formed on us being solid in our relationship with our higher powers and then coming together and forming a relationship together. Thank you very much.
I'm short, not invisible. Hi, my name is Beth. I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. Thank you for being here at the Yuma Roundup. And I want to thank the committee for how well they always treat Al-Anon here. The Yuma Roundup Committee has recognized for years now that Al-Anon is a vital part of our recovery community, and the welcome we get is just phenomenal. The couple that I am introducing you to today, Helene and Kevin, the first time I met them, we are not lifelong friends, I will put that out. The first time I met them was the first year that the Roundup moved into the Civic Center from the college. And that was the year that the heat didn't work in here. Some of you remember that. At that point in time, I was the co-chair for Al-Anon to the Roundup. It was the year before I stepped up into the chair position, and next year I get to step down. Thank you. Helene and Kevin showed up. They're snowbirds in Sierra Vista. And it was just like, oh my God, these are really neat people. And they were kind of like, is there anything we can do? Can we be assistance? Can we help? And they came back the next year, and they actually volunteered to do stuff. Yeah, and then we shut down for COVID, and then we reopened, and Helene and Kevin have been here every year, and they bring their RV, and they park in the parking lot, and they're here. They're willing to be of assistance. And they have just been so vital a part of the Al-Anon side of the Roundup. And when last year we did the first couples panel, and it was such a success, and the request was, can you do it annually? Because everybody loved it. And the decision was made to move it into the big room and have it be more prominent. And I went to Helene. I know Helene not just from her participation at the Roundup, but when we went to Zoom, Helene was part of one of the meetings that I do regularly on Zoom. And I like Zoom. Other than big events, I no longer do in-person meetings. I am on Zoom. I do 5 meetings a week, and I am all over. Yeah, most of mine are Arizona, but I do 2 that are part of the global electronic area for Al-Anon. Yeah, so I've got contacts now all over the country and the world. Yeah, but Helene's part of one of those meetings that's in the global community. And her shares just speak to me constantly. You know, like me, she is always referring to traditions and concepts. You know, my association with Kevin has not been near as close. You know, I see him at Roundups, and we've talked a little bit. But Helene is somebody who I have learned to value as a friend. And so when I knew we were going to do this again, I went, Helene, would you and your husband be willing to be the Al-Anon couple? I know you're coming. You always do. You know, you're a given at the Roundup. And they graciously accepted. So with that, I've been told that rock, paper, scissors means that Helene is going first and Kevin gets to have the final word.
Okay. My name is Helene. I'm a member of Al-Anon. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to share on this panel. I'm not an expert on relationships, nor am I a spokesperson for the Al-Anon family groups. We've been married for over 30 years, so I just have a little bit of experience, strength, and hope to share with you today. So I grew up in an alcoholic family system. I didn't know there was alcoholism in our family. I was just a kid. My dad is a periodic binge drinker. He would come home really happy some days and let us stay home from school, take us out to dinner, and then really mean and rageful the next day, yelling because we had our bikes in the driveway. So there was never any reason. It didn't make any sense to me. But I'm just a kid. That's how I'm living. I never knew what to expect. My mother and us 4 kids just scattered when we saw his car coming up the driveway. He went away for a rest 2 times when I was a teenager. Back then, that was just a psych ward. There was never any mention of alcoholism and nothing for family members. He attended a few AA meetings, but he never got sober. So I have a younger sister. She's also alcoholic. And I usually got in trouble for not bringing her home because I kept losing her in bars and things. She would have 1 drink, and then she would just disappear. And I didn't understand that. But I got in trouble because where was she? I don't know. She got sober in her 20s, and she is sober today. So by the time I was 24, I was full of anxiety, very confused, lonely, lost, and actually suicidal. My mother and sister had been attending Al-Anon and saw how miserable I was and suggested I go. I went to a meeting, and I brought with me a lot of anger and a really bad attitude. I thought everybody was way too honest, The slogans were stupid, and people were annoyingly kind. There was a lot of laughter in the room, and that made me even more mad. I didn't understand when they talked about taking care of myself. What did that have to do with anything? I just didn't get it. I had been blaming everybody for my unhappiness and knew for certain that if people would just behave, I'd feel a lot better. I didn't like any mention of God or a higher power. I hated the meeting so much. I've been coming back to Al-Anon for the last 40 years. I'm grateful I stayed long enough to be wrong about all of my assumptions. In our literature, it says, we who have been affected by someone else's drinking find ourselves inexplicably haunted by insecurity, fear, guilt, obsession with others, and an overwhelming need to control every person and every situation we encounter. That is a really good description of me at that time. I had been profoundly affected by the disease of alcoholism. I really just wanted to be lightly dusted, but that's not how alcoholism works. In my first year of Al-Anon, I was asked if I'd be interested in being an alternate GR. And I said, sure, even though I didn't know what it meant and nobody told me what it entailed. That innocent invitation made me just a little bit like maybe I could own my chair here. And obviously I needed to be there because now I was an alternate. And I usually looked at the floor, never said a word. And one meeting, a woman told me that I had beautiful eyes. And so I looked up for the first time. I gradually started talking to people after meetings instead of running out to my car. You literally would have had to chase me to talk to me before that. It was very difficult to call people in between meetings. If I did, it was to ask them if they were going to go to that meeting that night. So, one phone call at a time, I started opening up and sharing. People were always very kind. They would ask how I was doing. And this was way before cell phones, right? When I had to actually call somebody, leave a message on those things, those answering machines, right? And then wait for somebody to call me back. And I went to a lot of meetings. And at one point in my early recovery, I stopped working and I went every day and every night. I got a sponsor early on and I would call her every day crying and she would ask me what I was going to do that was going to be good for me that day. She had to give me some suggestions because I couldn't come up with any of them on my own. And she'd say, well, how about going for a walk or watching a movie or a bubble bath? And I'd cry and say, okay. And the next day I'd call her crying again. And she would ask, well, how was the walk or the movie or the bubble bath? It was my first introduction to properly caring for myself on a daily basis. I had no idea how to do that. So I met Kevin when he had 7 years of sobriety, and I had 7 years in Al-Anon. I don't know him as an active alcoholic. When he tells his AA story, I don't recognize that guy at all. We dated for a while, then decided to move in together, then even did couples counseling before we got married, in anticipation of some issues. Kevin had been divorced. He had 2 kids from his previous marriage, and one of the issues was whether we would have more kids. I really wanted kids, and we had to discuss how this was actually going to work. We were like 2 wounded kids, really, trying to act like grown-ups. We both brought with us a lot of fear into our marriage and struggled with how to communicate effectively, how to mind our own business, and even how to compromise. So we got married when I was 35. We had our son at 36, and then twins at age 40. And we've had our share of struggles, like any other family. We raised a developmentally disabled daughter, had years estranged from a son, dealt with aging parents, a drug overdose, and a death of a niece, the death of my nephew and my dad in 1 month's time, a kid's surgery, health concerns. We homeschooled our 3 kids, we ran a business together, and now we're navigating retirement. So my recovery needs to have a foundation first, which is, for me, being in the middle of Al-Anon. Strong sponsorship, a home group, regular attendance at meetings, sponsoring other women, and having a service position and having an ongoing relationship with the God of my understanding. I'm right in the middle. So I'm well protected on both sides. I don't just have a sponsor and don't use her. I actually use her to this day. And that works for me. The foundation is where then I can revisit daily or weekly to inventory myself and see whether it's solid or unstable. So part of my foundation today is my well-being. I'm responsible to keep myself spiritually fit. It's not Kevin's job. He's not responsible for how much sleep I get, whether I eat healthy, whether I exercise, or any of my emotions, right? Learning how to take care of myself has been an ongoing process. I was raised in a family to be a human doing. My tendency would be to overwork, not eat, not exercise, not go outside, and not even sleep much. So for many years, I lived from my neck up, overthinking, analyzing, trying to figure things out, replaying conversations, trying to control any outcomes. I seriously believe I could have died and my head would just go on living. That's how busy it was up there. So my head really wanted to control this talk also, because I was like, we only have 12 minutes. We need to, you know, get to the point. You don't want to duplicate things. They already heard we got married when I was 35. They already heard we have twins or whatever. And then I remembered, I'm among friends, 200 of my closest friends, and they're probably not going to remember what I said tomorrow anyway. So it's okay, you know. So my recovery was not handed to me on a silver platter. I had to actually do some work. So I did written step work with my sponsor, and I learned how to love myself. I did written tradition work, and I learned how to love other people, right? And I did written concept work, and I learned how to love the world that I live in. I continue to doing written step work, or written lots of different work. Right now, I'm working through the intimacy book again. And I did that when it first came out, but they're all good to be redoing all the time. I like to answer questions. I love the new daily reader. It's got a question after every meditation every day. So I can contemplate on that. We both have our solid foundations in recovery, and we remain teachable and are willing to grow and change. You know, so every December on our anniversary, I ask Kevin if there's anything I can change to make our relationship better. He usually jokes, and he says, let me get my list. But so far, I haven't gotten a list, so I'm trusting his words and that he would tell me, I trust that he would tell me if something was bothering him, so I don't have to wonder or obsess about what he's thinking. If he's got strong feelings about something, I don't think it's about me right away. I used to. But now it's just like that's what he needs to do. And if he needs to talk to me about something, he's gonna. I know that. Kevin doesn't need to hear everything in my head. That's what my sponsor's for. And Allopals. I know where I end and he begins. I know how to ask for help and how to reason things out with someone else. And then we can get back together to a resolution or a compromise. You know, years ago, I called my sponsor complaining about something. And she said, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I said, I want both. And she said, you can't have both. That's what strong sponsorship has done for me. And our marriage is better because of it. Because we both have sponsors. And when something comes up, like just a month ago, things came up, we immediately looked at each other and went to our sponsors. Then we came back together. Because they're not emotionally evolved. You know, they can give us a good perspective on what's actually happening here. So I've gotten a lot of help from the Al-Anon literature, opening our hearts, discovering choices, and the intimacy in alcoholic relationship books. They all have sections. You read it, and then you answer some questions. They're awesome. So now we're retired, and we live in Arizona in the winter and Montana in the summer. I go to Arizona in October because I don't want to shovel snow anymore. I don't even want to wear snow boots. So Kevin comes in December when he's done hunting and skiing. We don't take it personally when we have different activities or needs. We can spend time apart and be okay. We were just camping all last week, in Patagonia. So we were together 24/7 in a camper, and I still like him at the end of the day. This is the tough part. Jeez, I can't get through this. Kevin's the only husband I've ever had, and I'm thrilled to have had all these years with him. I feel spoiled and grateful most days. He still surprises me with his patience, compassion, humor, and willingness. He takes an AA meeting into our local county jail every week when we're in Bozeman, and when he comes back, he's a different man. I can see the principled person that he is. Today, I'm not afraid to be alone, and I'm not afraid to be in relationships with people. I can have casual acquaintances, and I can have deep, intimate friendships. People used to be a source of pain for me, and today they are a source of joy. So I'm here today. I trust that there's somebody here that needed to hear something that I said. I don't know who you are, and I don't know what I said, but I trust that that's what recovery does for us. Relationships panels usually fill up just like this room, just like this morning, and we all want that secret formula for success. I hope I gave you some tips, and I wish you all the best on your journey with yourself and with others. Thank you.
I'm such a good student.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kevin. And for the purpose of today, I'm grateful to be an Al-Anon member in that worldwide fellowship. It's done things for me that I cannot believe. So this has been an interesting process, for me at least, getting ready for the panel. Like Helene talked about, 12 minutes, we got to fit it all in. We want, you know, to give you all the good clues and tips and secrets and everything. And so talking between the two of us, I realized that this is really stuff we do all the time. It's kind of this reassurance of how we're living our life and the way we want to live our life through that. So... And, you know, it just got me thinking, how did all that happen? Sometimes I got to go through some pictures of my kids when they're little to remember they were little, you know, they were little kids and all the things we did. And we used to travel for several months in the winter. We'd come down through here with our kids. We homeschooled the three young ones, brought them with us and went to the Grand Canyon and Zion and Bryce Canyon and Yellowstone and all that stuff, you know, that I feel privileged to have done. And it was through, you know, recovery that happened. So I do need to give you a little bit of background because about where I came from, just so you have a picture of, like Helene said, this wasn't handed on a silver platter or anything, you know. This took some work. It took some work to be able to actually stay in a relationship. Getting in them's easy, right? And getting out of them's easy. Just, you know, but staying in the middle of it, staying part of it, that's the real challenge. So I grew up with alcoholism also. And I didn't realize that, you know. My mother went away for a rest. 3 months, you know, in classic alcoholic family fashion. At the end of that 3 months, we went to the state mental institution and got her and went on vacation. That's what the alcoholic family does, right? It's just make a vacation out of it. So it wasn't until I was in treatment for my own alcoholism that they put up on the board the dynamic of an alcoholic family, all those little circles on the chalkboard where each person kind of fit in that family, and I was like, damn, that's where I was at, you know. And fortunately, I landed in a treatment center. That's how good I was doing in life. And that was July of 1982. I've been sober since August of 1982 continuously. And that led me a couple years later into Al-Anon. So sometime in February of 1985, I stepped through the doors of Al-Anon. My marriage was in a bad place, like it had always been, of course. And so they were talking about relationships with other people. You know, and that's really, for me, that's what Al-Anon is about how I relate to other people. You know, it's not about the other people. So I'm relating to them. And I know that today, that history of in that alcoholic family and the survival skills that I created or took on to be in that, to get out of that family or to survive in that family, you know, all my shirts were hung, all my t-shirts folded, color-coded, my records were all numbered, cataloged, you know, in when I had my own room, because now this is not a thought I ever had at that time, because when I walked out that door, I didn't know what was going to be happening. I didn't know if my brother and my dad were going to be in a fist fight or my parents were going to be fighting. You know, at 18, when my parents divorced, I can just remember it was a relief. It was a relief. I was really angry for sure, but it was a relief that that had happened. So there is how I learned to deal with life, you know. Stick to myself. Please come here, but stay back here, you know. And I want all my toys in my corner and don't play with my toys. you know, you take those skills out into an intimate relationship, and I got to report, they don't work very well. At least for me. Maybe other people, they work fine. But for me, they just didn't work very well, because and one of the amends I had to make to my former wife was, you were right. I was trying to control you. Because she used to tell me that, you're just trying to control me. And I would just say, you know, yeah, but I got a lot of good ideas here. You know, I thought I did. I thought I knew how everybody else should be running their life. You know, I worked for my in-laws for a period of time, and if they would just do it this way, you know, things would work out. So it's not a very serene way to live, I can tell you. Depending on other people for my mood, for my happiness. And that's really what I was doing. I was putting all, you know, my happiness, my well-being in everybody else's hands. And again, I'm here to report, nobody behaves. Nobody behaves the way I think they really should. So it's a constant source of frustration. It was a constant source of frustration. So I got to come into Al-Anon and start, you know, hearing some things I really needed to hear at the time. And in step one, here's kind of the big book of Al-Anon. In step one, it says, our misplaced concern for others, I'm just helping. Our misplaced concern for others becomes intrusive, meddling, resented, and doomed to failure instead of helping those we care about. We demonstrate a lack of respect for them and create discord in our relationships. So me thinking I knew what another adult woman should be doing in her life was disrespectful. And that's what I take on today. You know, I'm not going to disrespect other people. There's mostly adults in my life today. They've probably been doing okay without me, you know. So what's been important for me is to, kind of like Helene touched on, we came together. We had baggage. I had baggage, I should say. I had baggage, you know, and luckily we had a program to that could direct us and help us work through a lot of that stuff. And really, it's not like, well, we come together to do that, but really, it's like, I needed to do my work. I needed to do my work and get to a place where, you know, everything she was doing didn't annoy me. Everything everybody else was doing didn't annoy me. And what do we call that? We call that a spiritual awakening, right? If I am spiritually fit, if I am okay with myself inside, it doesn't matter what's going on out there. I mean, Bill Wilson wrote about that. You can't be dependent on other people to be, you know, to make your life okay. You just can't. So, how is it that we, you know, got together, wounded children, married, three kids, traveled, did all these things. It feels a little surreal to me when I think about that, when I think about how that's come together. Well, as you can tell, Helene is full of self. Now, for you AAs, right, that's a bad word, right? But this is self-esteem. This is self-worth. This is self-sufficiency. And in that, that some of the stuff I most love about her is that she is fully self-sufficient in her own right. If I went away, I have no doubt in my mind she would be okay. Eventually. She would be okay eventually. And hopefully having some kind of a higher power in my life, a spiritual understanding, I know that I would be okay if this relationship ended, something happened. I'm going to be okay. So in that, there's a real freedom. There's a real freedom in that because like you talked about, we are choosing to come together. We're making a conscious choice to be in this relationship. And I love the theme, acceptance, because really that's what it is. If I'm not accepting of who she is, how she's living her life, or anything, I need to make another choice. I need to choose something, you know, where I'm comfortable with that. So accepting, and of course, you know, the thing about acceptance is you don't really have to like it. You just got to quit trying to change it. You know, so I'm not here to change her. She's got a sponsor. She's involved, service positions and things like that. And the same with me. I have a sponsor. I've gone through the steps, and I appreciate talking about the traditions. In this little book here, Paths to Recovery, the steps, traditions, and concepts are all in here. There's chapters on each one of them. And at the end of each chapter, for example, chapter one, there are 23 questions to answer. And the answer, I tell the men that I sponsor, is not yes or no. You know, do I accept alcoholism as is a disease? That's not a yes or no question. And again, the same thing with the traditions. There's 21 questions at the end of tradition one. And in classic Al-Anon style, they really turn it back on me. How am I doing that? How am I being a part of the group? How am I being part of the group conscience? How am I welcoming new people or new things into my life? People, places, and things. And I guess, where am I at, Beth? Okay, great. I did the four step the way I needed to do it the first time out of the big book, right out of the big book, the way that it's laid out there. And I do that with the men that I sponsor coming into Al-Anon. I tell you, I get a lot of guys coming in from AA, 25, 30 years sober, and they're suicidal. And I'm able to take them through the steps and make sure they've been through their steps in AA. And then I take them again through the fourth step out of the big book, which because it's kind of clean and simple, you know, get through it in there. Because Al-Anon has a four-step book, of course, questions, and there are 90 pages in there. It took me a while to get through this one, but I needed to go through the other one first. And then when I got to a place, because I'm going to tell you, this will eat your lunch if you're not ready. You know, there are chapters on honesty, self-worth, fear, anger, resentments, justification, control, and there's questions to answer, written questions. So that's why I have my notebook. This is what I, you know, my sponsor has done with me. I've gone through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts that way. In my notebook, we sit down, you know, initially it was, how was your week? You got 5 minutes. And then it's, what do you got written down? And that's the way I sponsor the guys that I sponsor is, okay, you got 5 minutes to dump, right? Unless you call me during the week or some other time, but when we're here, because my job as a sponsor is to help them go through the steps initially. And then if they stick around long enough, we'll go through the traditions and the concepts like that. So I guess my previous marriage, I had to go to the grocery store with my former wife. She couldn't do that on her own. And there were continuing things like that throughout that marriage. And so at the end of that marriage and in between, I had to do a lot of work on me and my what my idea of a relationship was. And I did a you know, more or less a four-step on what does a relationship look like. I dated or went to lunch with a few women in between, you know, because you go out on a date and then what do? You know, it's like, this is, so lunch is 1 hour and then it's done. So it's no wondering where do we go from here. And for me at the time, that was perfect because usually by about the third lunch, I knew whether this was something I wanted to pursue or not. And a friend of mine asked, do you think you could have a relationship with anybody outside the program? And I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. There's, you know, there's this common language we have, this common bond that we have. Some of it's in the misery, but, you know, mostly it's in the recovery. So Helene and I have had a 36-year relationship. 31 years of marriage, we've really got to grow up together in recovery. We've got to work through these things and use the principles and the steps, the traditions and the concepts in our relationship. And, I love the fact that she's fully self-sufficient. It just takes a load off me, right? Feeling like I am responsible. And, you know, I know that that's the same way that she feels about me, that she is not responsible for me in hardly any way at all. So there is a lot of literature. That book that Helene talked about is Intimacy in Alcoholic Relationships. That should be flying off the table at Beth's literature table. You know, chapters, questions, things to work through. Anyway, I love Al-Anon. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Saved my life, and I appreciate being here. Thanks.